Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies and 30 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing 66% humidity, west winds to 16 miles per hour, gusting to 20, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 30% chance of snow today, but mostly cloudy skies otherwise. High near 34 today. Northwest winds around 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, the U.S. Secretary of Commerce has approved 6 fishery disaster designations for the state of Alaska. An ancient weir has been discovered in southeast Alaska. And plowing the snow in Anchorage, it's been tough.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Never before has Congress referred a former president for criminal prosecution until today. The House Select Committee investigating the January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol is recommending that the Department of Justice criminally prosecute former President Donald Trump, who is running for president in 2024. The panel is targeting Trump and several election-denying allies, including members of Congress, for the roles they played surrounding the attack. NPR's Lexi Schapitl reports on the bipartisan committee's final public hearing this afternoon, which caps an 18-month investigation that included interviews with more than 100 witnesses.
The committee has voted to refer former President Trump to the Department of Justice for prosecution on 4 criminal charges, including inciting an insurrection, obstruction of an official government proceeding, and conspiracy to defraud the United States. Congressman Jamie Raskin said the panel has, quote, more than sufficient evidence to support the unprecedented move.
We have gone where the facts and the law lead us, and inescapably, they lead us here.
The referrals carry symbolic weight but are not legally binding. The Justice Department has been concurrently conducting its own investigation into the attack on the Capitol. Lexi Schapitl, NPR News.
A group of Republican-led states has asked the Supreme Court to pause a judge's ruling that would end pandemic restrictions at the southern border. NPR's Joel Rose reports those restrictions, known as Title 42, are set to end this week.
Republican attorneys general from 19 states are asking the Supreme Court to block a lower court ruling that found the Title 42 restrictions unlawful. The policy, first put in place by the Trump administration, has allowed immigration authorities to quickly expel migrants more than 2 million times without giving them a chance to seek asylum. The Biden administration is preparing for Title 42 to end this week. The number of migrant apprehensions is already climbing, straining the resources of immigration authorities and border communities. The same group of states already asked a federal appeals court to extend Title 42, but the court found those states waited too long to intervene in the case. Joel Rose, NPR News.
Nearly 200 countries have struck a historic deal to slow the rate at which species are going extinct because of human activity. Most significant part of the agreement announced today at the Biodiversity Summit, known as COP15 in Montreal, is a global commitment on 30 by 30, the initiative to protect 30% of the planet's land and water by the end of this decade. But Monica Koch-Magnuson, a Belize-based attorney and an outspoken advocate for indigenous people's rights, says she and others believe the agreement failed to ensure land and territorial protections of the very people whose traditions are rooted in sustainable living.
Our concern in this target is that we would hate that at the end of the day, our lands get taken away in the name of conservation.
The deal calls for hundreds of billions in financing, especially to assist island nations and developing countries. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The U.S. Secretary of Commerce has approved 6 fishery disaster designations for the state of Alaska. That includes the Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Chignik salmon fisheries for last year. Crabbers will also see relief for this year's Bristol Bay Red King Crab and Bering Sea Snow Crab fisheries. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced this fall that both fisheries would remain closed for the season due to low population numbers. Alaska's congressional delegation applauded the disaster approvals in a joint statement on Friday. Gabriel Prout is a Bering Sea crab fisherman from Kodiak. He owns the fishing vessel Silver Spray with his family. He says there's still uncertainty in the fleet about the road ahead, but Friday's announcement is a big step forward.
Definitely brings a little bit of some type of immediate psychological relief that they're working and taking this disaster seriously and what the fishermen are going through.
Researchers say they aren't certain what caused the snow crab's population collapse, which led to the fishery's closure, but they do believe climate change was a factor. Changing ocean conditions due to climate change are also likely contributing to salmon declines in parts of western Alaska. Congress still needs to allocate funding for each disaster designation, and fishermen will have to apply for financial relief. The process often takes years to get money to skippers and their crews. For thousands of years, indigenous peoples along the western coast of North America built stone weirs on beaches to trap fish on the incoming tide. It was an efficient way to catch them and also ecologically sound because it allowed the fish which were not used to swim away with the next tide. In southeast Alaska, sonar in 2010 spotted what looked like a structure underwater near Prince of Wales Island, one that a Canadian underwater archaeologist suspected was a weir. This year, a team of scientists got a closer look with an underwater drone and confirmed Dr. Kelly Monteleone's theory that the arc of stacked boulders was indeed a weir. Monteleone teaches anthropology and archaeology at the University of Calgary, and she presented her findings in Juneau recently at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, one of the partners in the project. She says the weir is at least 11,000 years old and perhaps one of the oldest in the world.
This means that they had those patterns 11,000 years ago, which means they were here so much longer.
Monteleone says the presence of the weir suggests the land was in use 5,000 years earlier than was thought. The fact that it was underwater also points to a drastic change in sea level in a very short period of time.
Does that mean that with this level of sea level rise, change became the new normal?
That's a question scientists want to know more about. They say knowledge about how people adapted to drastic changes in sea levels 11,000 years ago could be helpful to us today as we cope with climate change. Monteleone and partners in the project have adopted what a Mi'kmaq elder has described as two-eye seeing.
The idea is with two-eyed seeing is that you're able to look at both an indigenous lens or viewpoint and a Western scientific viewpoint at the same time.
Monteleone says her research incorporates oral histories and traditional knowledge to get a more holistic look at the patterns of land use. The project is also part of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's ongoing efforts to document the presence of indigenous peoples in southeast Alaska to strengthen their historic claim to the land. 3 major snowstorms in under 2 weeks have made travel tough in Anchorage. Bus service has been unreliable, driving has been sketchy, and pedestrians haven't been able to count on clear sidewalks. Some residents have questioned why snow in a northern city has been so disruptive. But Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports the mayor's administration says it's doing the best it can between labor and equipment shortages and an historic series of snowstorms.
Yep. Go forward a little bit.
After the first snowstorm, Jovel Rennie of downtown Anchorage tweeted an open offer to help people get their cars unstuck. He says it's his favorite winter activity.
I was like completely serious because it feels good, you know, and it's like you're being a good neighbor and being stuck sucks. Like you never get stuck in a convenient time. It sucks to even have to be on the roads.
He isn't a professional driver or anything. He's just the friendly guy that's into off-roading. He's got a truck kitted out with tow ropes and other handy gear. In the last few weeks, he says he's helped more than 20 drivers get unstuck. His only ask is they pay it forward. Beyond the drivers Rennie has helped, police have reported dozens of cars trapped on snowy roads over the past 2 weeks, and local schools have shut down for 5 days, citing heavy snow and dangerous road conditions. The trio of storms has prompted questions about how the city manages snow removal and residents' expectations.
It is the picturesque scene in the snow globe without, like, any proper road maintenance, at least the first couple of days were. When you get on the roads, it just was not fun.
Anchorage Assembly Chair Suzanne LaFrance said her constituents see snow removal as an essential service that must be done quickly and thoroughly. She brought up the issue at a meeting earlier this week.
The recent snowstorms have made clear that despite being a winter city, the municipality is not equipped to deal with a significant snow event.
She urged Mayor Dave Bronson to take action for the sake of public safety, schools, and the economy.
Fix this problem so we are not in this situation again, where streets remain impassable for days and schools and businesses are closed down.
She invited the mayor to get a proposal in front of the assembly for its next meeting on Tuesday so more can be done. Hans Rodvik, spokesman for the mayor's office, said on Thursday the administration does not expect to have new snow removal requests at that meeting. But he said there will at some point likely be a request for money to hire contractors to haul away snow earlier than usual. Otherwise, he said, even with the new agreements to temporarily boost the city's snowplow force, the muni snow removal budget for the rest of the year appears to be on track, barring more major winter storms.
So we're pretty good, we think, through the end of the year.
The city's street maintenance shop has enough drivers to run their main snow removal equipment continuously in alternating 12-hour shifts. But those drivers can't maintain that pace forever. If they were better staffed, Rodvik says the drivers would get more relief, and that pace would be more sustainable. Rodvik says it's a problem that more money may not be able to solve.
You know, if the assembly wants to send more resources our way, that's fine. But at the end of the day, we've talked to the experts. There's just a lack of qualified drivers out there right now and a lack of available equipment.
Like this grader. Clearing snow in my neighborhood on Thursday afternoon.
So we're not trying to play politics. We're just focused on delivering what the citizens expect.
He says there are more than 20 unfilled jobs for drivers who can operate snow removal equipment. That's down from around 30 earlier this year. The situation on the state side is similar.
I would say the biggest factor right now is the volume of snow.
That's Justin Shelby, Administrative Operations Manager for the State Transportation Department's Central Region.
There's always issues with equipment and particularly recently with staffing, but that's not what's causing the challenge for us right now. What's causing the challenge for us right now is the amount of snow.
There is some good news. The forecast from the National Weather Service calls for cold temperatures and clear skies through the weekend and into next week. In Anchorage, with help from Matt Fabian, I'm Jeremy Shea.
The jailed leader of the Oath Keepers is likely to be a witness today in the trial in Palmer over Representative David Eastman's eligibility to hold office. The case is the first test of a disloyalty clause in the state constitution. It says members of a group advocating the violent overthrow of a government, can't hold public office. Eastman has acknowledged he holds a lifetime membership in Oath Keepers. Some of the group's members participated in the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. The group's president, Stuart Rhodes, was convicted last month of seditious conspiracy for his role. Eastman's attorney, Joe Miller, says he hopes to call Rhodes as a witness today. Rhodes would testify from jail, where he's awaiting sentencing. Miller also plans to call John Eastman, former President Trump's election advisor, who is unrelated to the Alaska legislature. The case turns on whether the Oath Keepers advocated for concrete action designed to overthrow the government by force. Terrorism experts called by the plaintiffs say the group is a right-wing militia committed to anti-constitutional ideals. Eastman's side portrays the Oath Keepers as patriots defending the Constitution from communism. Superior Court Judge Jack McKenna has asked the attorneys to submit briefs on whether the authors of the state constitution intended mere membership in the group to be disqualifying. Eastman, a Wasilla Republican who is often at odds with other Republican legislators, easily won re-election last month.
The Anchorage School Board will decide today whether to increase class sizes to help close a projected $48 million budget deficit for the next school year. But as Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, many teachers have a lot of concerns about adding even more students to already packed classrooms.
In Anchorage schools, the average pupil-to-teacher ratio, or PTR, is about 27 to 1. But that's just an average, and some teachers say their class sizes are way bigger. That includes English teacher Derek Reed at Betty Davis East Anchorage High School. He's had as many as 36 students in one class.
I didn't even have enough chairs or desks for students and had to go get more. And then everyone was crammed in so tight they couldn't even move around the room.
Anchorage school officials are now proposing to further increase class sizes. They need to close a $48 million budget gap. Among the suggestions the school board has expressed support for is increasing the pupil-teacher ratio by one. District Chief Financial Officer Jim Anderson says the PTR increase would result in a loss of about 60 teachers, saving the district a little over $7 million.
So that would equal, on average, a little bit less than one teacher per school. But obviously, schools that lose more students or schools who gain more students would be impacted differently when we do a PTR change.
Anderson has been in charge of the district's finances since 2016, and he says there have been PTR increases since, but only for classes above third grade. Most of the impacts are to middle and high school classrooms. Corey Aist, president of the Anchorage Education Association Teachers Union, says he's concerned that increasing class sizes will negatively impact learning.
All the research indicates is there's two factors that mostly affect student outcomes, class size and family involvement.
Roemig Middle School science teacher Ben Walker says with larger classes, it can be difficult to supervise and make sure every student is on task. He says he's regularly had more than 30 students per class in recent years.
In terms of room, you know, walking around the room and keeping an eye on what's going on, you get in a side conversation with a kid, and on the other side of the room, there's really no one to supervise that. So the more we can limit those sort of situations, the better, and it's a lot easier with fewer kids.
Also, as a science teacher, Walker says having more students in a class presents safety concerns when they're working with chemicals and Bunsen burners. Walker says he had so many students this year, he decided to teach an extra class period.
And I actually now gave up planning time and am teaching six classes instead of five in order to get those class sizes down. And I'm being compensated for it, but still it's been a rough year not having a personal planning time.
Up in Chugiak at Mirror Lake Middle School, science and health teacher Carrie Lathrop says another issue is space.
With 36 students, the only way I can arrange my room is with six rows of six, and kids in the back, they really can't see what we're doing up in the front of the room. So it makes it really difficult for all the kids to have access to the materials that are being taught.
Lathrop says she's come home with bruises from bumping into cramped classroom desks and worries what adding additional students would do. Anderson, the district CFO, says he understands that there are no budget changes that would leave everyone involved happy. However, he says increasing or decreasing the pupil-to-teacher ratio is one of few moves that is reversible in the short term. He said the district did that roughly 5 years ago.
And we had to issue layoff notices to a number of teachers. About 4 weeks later, the state gave us one-time funding. We met with the board, and we were able to take that one-time funding and reoffer those positions back.
School district officials, teachers, and union officials all agreed that a long-term fix to budget instability is inflation adjustment increases to state funding. The current budget proposal from Governor Mike Dunleavy offers a slight bump to the base student allocation, though it's far below the rate of inflation. Meanwhile, Reed, the English teacher at East High, says years of budget uncertainty and cuts are leading to more and more teachers leaving the profession.
I think even long-term teachers that have been there 30 years are going, I think it's about time for me. And new teachers are jumping ship earlier than what they imagine. And mid-career teachers that have 12, 15 years in are doing the same thing.
The Anchorage School Board is expected to vote on several preliminary budget changes, including potentially increasing the pupil-to-teacher ratio at their next meeting Monday evening. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Stocks open mixed. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. Markets fell last week after the Federal Reserve hiked interest rates another half a percentage point. Fed Chair Jerome Powell warned the Fed will continue raising rates to beat back inflation, leading to fears of a recession next year. Tesla stock rallied after a majority of users in a Twitter poll voted for Elon Musk to step down as CEO. Tesla shares have plummeted since Musk took over Twitter, with some Tesla investors complaining Musk is neglecting them. The European Union is accusing Meta of violating EU antitrust rules. The EU objects to Meta tying its online classified ad service to Facebook. Meta says the allegations are false. And Binance has agreed to buy the bankrupt Voyager Digital's assets for about $1 billion. FTX was supposed to acquire Voyager before FTX itself went bankrupt. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
What if accessing your personal and family immunization records was as easy as checking your phone? The Docket app is a secure option that allows Alaskans to quickly access their immunization records. Need immunization records for school or travel? Docket makes it simple and is available for download from the App Store or Google Play. Learn more at vaccinationrecords.alaska.gov. Paid for by the Alaska Department of Health.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 19th day of December, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:51. It will set again promptly at 4:22. That will give us 6 hours and 31 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of a mere 23 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 44 degrees. That was set in 1985, 2011, and in 2014. And our record low was 5 degrees, set in 1919. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will happen at 5:02 here on the east side and be 8/10 of a foot, followed by a high tide at 11:18 this evening, of 6.2 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will happen at 5:35 this afternoon and be 8/10 of a foot in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a high tide at 11:43 p.m. of 11.1 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. For today, northeast 15, seas to 6 feet. Turning to north 15 tonight, seas to 5 feet, and north 15 tomorrow, seas to 5 feet. But tomorrow night, east winds to 30, seas to 9 feet, and for Wednesday and Thursday, northeast 40, seas to 27 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow, northeast 25 today in the Shelikof, and seas to 8 feet. For tonight, northeast 30, seas to 7 feet, and freezing spray. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, northeast 25, seas to 8 feet, and freezing spray in the morning. Tuesday night in the Shelikof, northeast 30, seas to 9 feet, and for Wednesday, east 45, seas coming up to 14 feet on Wednesday on our west side. Well, they are here. KMXT's new 2023 calendars are in. So if you're a current member, be sure to stop by and pick up your free copy. Additional copies can be had for a mere $15 apiece, and non-members are welcome to come in and pick up copies for $20 each. They're beautiful calendars, thanks to everyone who submitted local photographs, and a special thanks to those who had their entries picked for the calendar. It's a great gift idea for those on your shopping list. Stop by and pick up a handful during our business hours, which are Monday through Friday between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Merry Christmas from everyone here at KMXT. Here are the upcoming Kodiak Island Borough meetings. On December 21st, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. On December 28th, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 5:15 p.m. And on December 29th, the Assembly will be having a work session, also in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. The next regular assembly meeting is Thursday, January 5th. All these meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Well, it's that time of year. Several of the City of Kodiak's advisory board and commissioner positions will expire on December 31st or are already vacant. The city is seeking volunteers to serve on a number of different boards and commissions, including the Building Code Board of Appeals. They need 4 members. They need 2 impending positions. The terms will end December 31st, 2025, and members should be qualified by experience and training to pass upon members pertaining to building construction. 1 member may be selected from the community at large. Also, the Historic Preservation Commission, we need commissioners. 1 commission is needed who resides in the city and has demonstrated interest in or knowledge of historic preservation, history, anthropology, and or architecture. That term ends December 31st, 2024. And they also need a commissioner who may reside outside the city, filling the professional designated position of anthropologist, as required by the National Park Service regulations, for a term ending December 31st, 2025. There are also a number of positions open on the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, always a popular board. 4 regular members shall reside within the Kodiak city limits, and 3 regular members may reside in the borough. So 4 positions are open with a term ending December 31st, 2025, 2 with a term ending December 31st, 2024, and all as well as alternate positions with terms ending December 31st, 2023. And they also need ex officio United States Coast Guard position for the Parks and Rec Board and an ex officio student position. So lots of opportunity there to make a difference in your community. Also the Personnel Board. They have 2 vacant positions ending December 31st, 2023, and 1 ending December 31st, 2024. If you have any interest in serving in this way, contact the city clerk. Their number is 907-486-8636, and they'd like you to submit applications by January 4th if you can, or visit the city's website to find out more information as well. ANSI is conducting a 2-day fishing vessel drill conductor class in Kodiak on January 4th and 5th. They're from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. with drills and a pool session. And mostly it's going to happen at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center over at 118 Trident Way on Near Island. The cost for the class is free for Kodiak Commercial Fishing Fleet and $225 for anybody else. This class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. You can register online at www.amsea.org. That's AMSEA.org. Or give them a call on the phone at 907-747-3287. And the Coast Guard Marine Safety Detachment in Kodiak would like to remind you to consider the stability of your vessel when loading crab and cod pots. Stacking the pots does change the center of gravity, and that affects the stability, especially in icing conditions. Personnel from the Coast Guard Safety Office in Kodiak will be walking the docks, providing voluntary safety compliance checks with an emphasis on stability. You can call them at 907-486-5918 to schedule a visit, or stop by their office in the subway building downtown if you have any questions at all. And the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary's Angels of Love is going on. It's a chance to place your loved one's name on an angel this holiday season. Honor the life of someone you miss and celebrate the life of someone you love. It's a $10 donation for each angel. Make your donation in person at the hospital admitting reception desk. Or you can, let me see, I'm looking for the number. You can mail them to the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary. That's at 1915 East Rezanoff Drive in Kodiak. And don't forget the last few days of the free Aleutic Museum admission provided by Mattson. If you haven't gone in and visited the Aleutic Museum during this month of free admission, don't forget to do so.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.